So the last presentation of the morning is a comparison of two knee joint angles in the measurement of MVC decrease due to tendon vibration, and our presenters are Bobby, Tony, Kim, John, and Sean.
He might allow me to stand for that. So we are here to illustrate our results of tendon vibration at two different knee joint angles. And a quick breakdown of what we'll be presenting today. First of all, we'll give you a review of the literature, some of the previous research in the area, and hopefully we'll be able to develop a little bit of a knowledge deficit, outline our aims and the hypotheses of our experimentation, outline the methods, give you the statistics and results, a little bit of discussion, of course, the references. So a quick introduction into the area. Vibration applied to all muscle affects its ability to generate force. Short-term vibration facilitates or increases muscle force production. And we're all familiar with the vibrating force plates at the gym that you see people on. However, prolonged vibration, as defined as 2 minutes or greater, actually is detrimental to force development. So the same stimulus applied to different lengths of time actually has different results. So it's an interesting dynamic between vibration force, force production, and time. So to give you a little bit of an introduction, first of all, we'll take a look at short-term vibration and what causes the increase in muscle force production. And central to this is the muscle spindle and its afferent. From here on and out, whenever we refer to 1A afferents, that kind of refers to the muscle spindle outputs, if we don't define that each time. So like I said, the muscle spindle is central to this effect. A quick review of neurophysiology and exposure to short-term vibration. So how is the muscle spindle central to this effect? Vibration applied to the muscle kind of acts almost like a short stretch reflex. I think we're all very familiar with that, but just to recap. So stimulation of the muscle spindle here causes excitatory inputs along the 1A afferent fibers back to the spinal cord to cause an excitatory presynaptic facilitation of the alpha motor neuron there. That excitation allows for the depolarization of the alpha motor neuron to happen more readily, and it facilitates muscle contraction. So with the facilitation of the alpha motor neuron, you have a greater number of motor neurons that are available to fire to help you with the strength of contraction. So prolonged vibration actually results in a decrease in force generation. And again, the muscle spindle afferents are central to this effect. So again, all the alpha motor neurons in the spinal column experience a decrease in the afferents coming from the muscle spindle. So prolonged vibration actually creates an attenuated effect of the 1A afferents on the alpha motor neurons. There's a couple different physiological reasons why that is, but suppressive effects on the 1A afferents reduces the available alpha motor neuron pool ready to recruit muscle fibers, and this leads to a decrease in maximum force production. So with an attenuation of the ability to develop force, the alpha motor neurons, we're all familiar with high and low threshold alpha motor neurons. The threshold dictates how much input's required to cause the depolarization to cause that muscle twitch. We all know that high threshold innervate fast, powerful fast twitch muscle fibers, and low threshold motor units innervate slow postural muscles. So it's an idea that you kind of have to wrap your head around, that low threshold required less inputs to cause depolarization. So if you have presynaptic inhibition at the low threshold, you're going to have less of an effect than the high threshold, which require more input to cause the depolarization. So if you have the high threshold motor units that have a greater attenuation of force production, your ability to develop maximum force inside that muscle is going to be affected more than the smaller, low threshold motor units. So again, vibration doesn't affect the motor neurons equally. Detrimental effect on firing with high threshold motor units versus low threshold motor neurons, and the result is a decrease in the ability to generate maximum force with prolonged vibration.
All right, so I'm going to build upon what Ken was talking about, how vibration does not affect motor neurons equally. There has been studies where they use a triceps serrate muscle group to highlight the different effects of vibration on the high threshold versus the low threshold motor neurons. And in humans, it has been found that the gastrocnemius muscle is made up of about 50 to 70% of type 2 fibers, whereas the soleus has about 80 to 100% of type 1 fibers. As a result, it has been proposed that the suppression of muscle activity after prolonged vibration will be more prominent in the gastroc compared to the soleus, because again, the gastroc has a higher percentage of type 2 fibers, and these are generally supplied by the high threshold motor neurons. In 2005, Yoshiyama and al. They wanted to investigate the effects of vibration on different muscle fiber types. More specifically, they looked at the soleus and the gastrocnemius muscle. So what they did was they seated their subjects with their knee at 180 degrees, so full extension, with the ankle in neutral. They exposed the Achilles tendon to 30 minutes of vibration, and they got their subjects to perform a maximal voluntary contraction of plantar flexion before and after vibration. And what they found was that there was a decrease in plantar flexion MVC post-vibration. Additionally, there is a greater reduction in EMG activity of the gastrocnemius muscle with no change in soleus. However, they only found this decrease in force production in the one knee joint angle position, thus the gastrocnemius muscle length remained constant. But if we review the anatomy of the gastrocnemius muscle, we know that it's a biarticular muscle which crosses both the knee and the ankle joint, so that it's possible that the muscle length of gastroc can change as we modify the joint angle, and the soleus only crosses the ankle joint, so there's no change in muscle length when knee angle or knee joint angle changes. Likewise, maximal force production is a function of muscle length. So what we know is that the gastrocnemius muscle is susceptible to decrease in force production after prolonged vibration. What we don't know is that if vibration affects the gastrocnemius muscle equally at varying muscle lengths. In 2005, there was a study done by Cresswell et al., and they wanted to investigate plantar flexion MVC at various knee joint angles. So what they did was they got their subjects to produce a maximal voluntary contraction of plantar flexion with the knee joint angle at 180, so full extension, 120, 180, 150, 120, and 90 degrees. And what the general trend was that the gastrocnemius EMG activity and force production decreased as knee joint angle changed from 180 to 90 degrees. And this confirms that modifying the knee joint angle can influence plantar flexion MVC. That's a lot right now, but I'm gonna tie it all together in a sec. And the reason why MVC dropped was that there is a optimal sarcomere length where maximal force production is possible right here at the plateau region. As we move away from this optimal length, the force production drops, and it's due to a limitation in the actin and myosin cross bridges. So linking Ken's thoughts and my thoughts together, the first point is that prolonged vibration has a negative effect on high threshold fast twitch fibers. Gastroc is made up of a high percentage of fast twitch fibers. As a result, force production drops with prolonged vibration. The second point is that muscle length can influence maximal force production. Again, studies have shown that the gastrocnemius force production is affected by its muscle length. And the third point is that the gastroc muscle length changes as knee joint angle changes with a fixed ankle joint. So with the knee joint angle of 180 degrees, this will result in a longer gastrocnemius muscle length compared to a knee joint angle of 90 degrees. And these are the reasons why we chose to look at the gastroc muscle in our study. Our aim is to investigate the after effects of 30 minutes of prolonged vibration on two different gastrocnemius muscle lengths and its consequence to plantar flexion and VC. And we hypothesize that prolonged vibration to the Achilles tendon will cause a greater reduction in plantar flexion and VC with the knee joint angle at 180 degrees compared to a knee joint angle of 90 degrees.
So I'm going to go through the methods about how we tested this hypothesis. But first, I'm going to go through how we also got our subjects and screened them. So we had 16 subjects in total, 5 women, 11 men, age range from mid-20s, so 23 to 37 years old. Height began at 161 and ended at 193 centimeters. And their weight varied from 57.5 to 92 kilograms. In order to screen the participants for testing, we had the ACSM screening questionnaire. Just to go over that briefly, that went over a past medical history and a cardiovascular health. We also made sure to go into the past medical histories to tease out whether they had any neurological disorders which would affect the study. After we gave them a detailed explanation of the protocol, their informed consent was given. And we also requested that no alcohol or caffeine was taken 24 hours prior to testing, and that no heavy exercise was done in the day before as well. So I'm going to briefly go over the equipment we used. On the left-hand side is the Biodex System 4 Pro. In the next slide, I'll also go through some of its components a little more in depth, but basically, it measures the torque around an axis of rotation. If you look at the picture on the right-hand side, it's the vibrator apparatus. The frequency is 110 hertz with a 3 mm amplitude. The vibrator head is the white part there that's sitting above the orange base. And we also constructed a bracket, which is the aluminum that the vibrator is sitting in, and had to put it onto the foot plate. And that allowed us to move the vibrator up and down to accommodate for different lengths of the Achilles muscle tendon junction in different individuals. Great. So this is comes down to sort of the base assessment. We broke it down into two different knee joint angles, 180 degrees as seen on the left, and 90 degrees as seen on the right. So on the left-hand side, you can see the subject has their shoe strapping to the foot plate. And if you look at the level of the malleolus, and you go opposite side, so the lateral malleolus is in line with the axis of rotation of the Biodex machine in order to accurately assess the anatomical movement above the tibial rural joint. And if you look on the right-hand side picture, the subject's knee is at 90 degrees, and both of these angles were measured using a goniometer. So each subject completed a trial at both knee joint angles. The order of testing was randomized through an order of effects as well. There was also 1 week separation between the two trials. As you see on the picture on the bottom right, their upper bodies and their torso were secured to the Biodex seat using straps in order to prevent any secondary muscle production force. So basically, we tried to isolate the plantar flexors as much as we could. So this is the bulk of the trials that happen on each day. And it can be broken up into two sections, a pre-vibratory period and a post-vibratory period. In each period, there are 3 MVCs, so 3 maximum voluntary contractions. And in between each MVC, there's a 15-second rest period. At the end of the group of 3 MVCs, the first one, we had 30 minutes of vibration that was applied. During this time, the subjects were instructed to relax their leg muscles. As soon as that period ended, we began the second round of 3 MVCs. Similar to the pre-MVC round, each maximum voluntary contraction had a 15-second rest period in between. After the third one was completed, that was the end of testing for that day. And this was repeated when they came back a week after, but just at a different knee joint angle. Also, it's worth mentioning that there's a standardized encouragement and feedback that was given throughout the trials. So now Sean's going to talk about the data analysis.
Okay, so as we said, each subject performed their 3 MVC trials in pre and post vibration. And out of these 3 trials, the absolute maximum peak torque value was taken as the true MVC. Before we finished the testing, we actually did a quick pilot study on after the first 7 subjects and calculated our effect size to see if we were going to have a good chance of reaching significance and whether that would affect how big of a sample we need to recruit. And unfortunately, at that point, it became clear that we were not showing a significant trend. And our power calculation showed that we'd need a sample size of over 400. We did settle on a sample size of 16, which is consistent. It's actually consistent with the literature. If you look at most of the sample sizes, would be between 12 and 20. So we used a repeated measure ZANOVA. So repeated measures because our design has a pre and post, so a time factor. And also ANOVA is indicated when you want to analyze the variance between groups of samples. We originally said it in our proposal that we'd use SPSS, but it turns out the lab we were working with discontinued their subscription of SPSS, so we used the Statistica model. So here presented in the graph are the means and the standard deviations for each of the conditions. So result number one, we found that MVC torque at 90 degrees was less than MVC torque at 180. And that was to a p-value of 0.001. The actual values are 80.5 newton meters in the 90 degree testing position and 131.5 in the 180 degree testing position. Our two-way ANOVA also revealed a significant decrease in MVC due to vibration to a p-value of 0.002. So the average decrease pre and post at the 180 degree condition was 19.3, and the mean decrease was 16.6 at 90 degrees. Finally, our third result, and this was the main result we were interested in, was to evaluate the interaction between changing the joint angle and seeing the effect of vibration. And unfortunately, we found no interaction effect, so no significant effect when those two study conditions are combined. And for those of you who are visually oriented, here's just a quick chart. So if you look at the blue line, that's the 180 pre and post, you can see a significant decrease between pre and post. The red line is the 90 degree condition, also a significant decrease between pre and post. And then if you look at the difference between the 180 condition and the 90 condition, you see the 90 condition quite a bit lower, showing significance. But unfortunately, both effects have nearly identical slopes, showing no significant interaction.
So moving on to a little bit of discussion here. We have, firstly, the effects of joint angle. Now, as expected and is well documented in literature and as you have all learned in PT school, we're going to generate more force in full extension with plantar flexion than we will with the knee flex to 90 degrees. Pretty straightforward research here, confirmed by Cresswell in 2005. We found a significant decrease in MVC with that change in joint angle. Now, this is purely just because of that length-tension relationship of the gastrocnemius muscle, not so because of soleus, because we all know that soleus doesn't change its length at all when you change the knee joint angle. Secondly, we have the effect of vibration on MVC. Now, this is also well documented in the literature. We found, confirmed rather, that there are significant decreases in MVC following prolonged periods of tonic vibration. Now, as we explained before, that's a 30-minute period that was documented within the literature, but prolonged vibration has also been defined as anything beyond that 2-minute period. Now, as Ken discussed earlier, this is mainly due to that 1A afferent attenuation, so the chronic stimulation of that tonic vibratory reflex, if you want to call it, and exhausting the 1A afferent, which leads to a decrease in MVC torque. So here we have MVC torque being reduced following the exposure to prolonged tonic vibration, found to be about a factor of 20% by Kuzaki in 2000 and Yoshiyama in 2004. Thirdly, and as Sean just previously stated, there's no interaction effect between joint angle and vibration. So in other words, there's no difference in the plantar flexor MVC of the tricep psoriae when the Achilles tendon is vibrated at two different joint angles, degrees and the knee at 90 degrees. So this supports the acceptance of the null hypothesis that there is, in fact, no interaction effect here. And there are several limitations that could have influenced this deduction. So firstly, we have test subject positioning, which I'm going to get into in a moment. And secondly, the question of whether or not we actually had true MVC production from our subjects. So firstly, in subject positioning, the Biodex protocol actually specified a 60-degree knee angle for the measurement of plantar flexion MVC, allowing the use of a blocking pad for the proximal thigh, which I'm going to show you in a moment, to stabilize the leg so that a full maximal plantar flexion effort can be provided. However,
given that we were interested in looking at the difference in length of the gastrocnemius muscle, we did have to choose two conditions in which we would get the maximum change in length, which for experimental considerations was 90 and 180, as you've seen so far, to create that greatest difference in muscle length. There's a query as to whether or not we had insufficient stabilization of the knee at 90 degrees, and whether or not the plantar flexors could have been isolated in this position, whether or not there could have been some auxiliary muscle use, such as the glutes. And if we go into the picture here of subject positioning, you can clearly see how Biodex recommends that you have subjects position. Now, if we go back to where we were doing our study, you can clearly see that each condition is a little bit different than the way Biodex specifies it. If you look at the proximal thigh right here, you'll notice that there is a clean attachment that wraps around the thigh to stabilize it. Unfortunately, we were not able to use that device because of the way the apparatus is designed. So, interestingly enough, this wasn't a problem in our 180 degree condition. We found very much what you would in the literature here. You know, established research found plantar flexor MVC to be about 135 millimeters within the 180 degrees. Our data showed 131.5. Now, difference of 2.6%. No big deal here. If we look at the knee joint angle at 90 degrees, however, we're looking at a difference between 103 and 80. So the MVCs that our subjects presented, on average, were much less than what current research has suggested, on the order of a 22.3% difference. So this could, in fact, be a bit of a query here. Secondly, the question as to whether or not there was a true MVC present is also quite interesting. Now, we tried to ascertain a full MVC by taking the greatest value out of three MVC efforts with plantar flexion in both pre and post trials for both knee joint angles. We trained the subjects prior to testing them, of course, to make sure that they knew exactly what they were to do. And the Biodex machine itself incorporated a number of straps to strap down the hips and the upper body so that there weren't any accessory bracing methods that were used to use other muscle groups in the plantar flexion task. Finally, other experiments have employed what's called the interpolated twitch method. Now, in this method, you're basically applying an external stimulator to the posterior tibial nerve in order to facilitate, so to speak, any other motor neurons that have not been activated during an MVC task. Why is this of interest? During a normal MVC, you're going to recruit all of your motor neurons, and your whole motor neuron pool is going to be exhausted. So any external stimulation beyond that would do nothing at all. However, if you do have a difference between the application of an external stimulation and just a pure individual effort, then you would have an idea whether or not a submaximal MVC effort is provided by the subject. As such, then the trial could either be thrown out or recompleted on another day to ensure that a maximal effort was represented in the data. So unfortunately, at the time, our research lab did not have any suitable stimulator to complete this type of measurement. And the Biodex data analysis software is unsuitable to collect the data that's necessary for this method. And additional equipment would be needed to do this. So some conclusions coming back to everything here. We've confirmed two common findings in the literature. One, prolonged tonic vibration reduces plantar flexor MVC torque. Secondly, plantar flexion torque is less when the knee is at 90 degrees of flexion when compared to a full extension of the knee joint at 180 degrees. Finally, there's no difference in the reduction of plantar flexion MVC due to tonic vibration at 90 degrees and 180 degrees. On this note, there's a few considerations for future research. One thing that we noticed that was interesting with our studies is that different people had different responses to vibration after the fact. Certain people had a more prolonged effect. They were noticing that their proprioception around their ankle joint was a little bit compromised afterwards, had difficulty walking. The first time that I did the trial, in fact, I had a severely ischemic calf and I almost fell over when I came off the Biodex machine. Of course, we had to modify the protocol after that. But it was interesting to note that there was, in fact, some individual variability in the proprioception that that all of us had and our subjects had during the study. So that could be something that would be of interest to study in the future, whether or not there is some sort of systematic a response after vibration. Our study didn't look at that, and we didn't notice anything in the literature as to this note. Similarly, we could have also changed the knee angles in our conditions to make sure that things were a little bit more stabilized. Changing our 90 degree condition to the 60 degree condition that was in the BioX, this could have been another possibility. However, in order to, as we mentioned before, change the muscle length maximally to get any possible effect that is out there, we had to choose the 90 degree condition. Finally, we'd like to make some acknowledgments. A few of you actually did volunteer for our research, so we did want to thank you publicly for that. You certainly made our research possible. And there are numerous other participants as well. We'd also like to thank Dr. Garland and Dr. Ivanova, who supervised us throughout the entirety of this research, from its inception to all of the research trials that we completed up to the statistical analysis and the development of this presentation today. So, we'd like to thank you for your time, and that's all we have for you.
Yes.
So if you had a client come into your clinic and say that they have this vibration plate at the gym and they're really excited about using it for their fitness program, what do you think as a physio? What would be a sort of client-friendly answer you would give them?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend to use it concurrently with the workout, but I wouldn't have it past that 2 minutes. That's what the literature supports, that the drop in muscle force production starts. And so while you're doing the exercise, I would say go ahead, but after that 2 minutes, I would say don't stand on it longer than that.
Yes?
You guys mentioned in previous studies that they talked about proprioception might be changed. Are there any other studies that talked about like other sensory things that might have been changed, like sensation on the skin or something that might affect how much somebody can voluntarily contract?
That's a good question, but we didn't come across any research that talked about sensation. It was just purely EMG activation and muscle force production.
You might have touched on this, I can't remember, but in terms of the frequency of the vibration that was used, like, is it pretty standard in the literature and you just use that, or is it kind of all over the place, and is there any room for further research on different?
Yeah, of course. In different studies that we looked at, Cristiano, they said that higher frequency, the better that it targets the high threshold. So they were saying anything over 80 hertz, and ours was at 110, and they used between 80 and 100, so the higher, the better for our person. Yeah, and also there were previous studies with eliciting vibration, like an MBC, by Dr. Garland, and she also used the same vibrator previous job as well.
Aside from the vibration machine at the gym, are there any other real-life applications for this, or kind of implications for like work safety with jackhammers or anything like that you came across?
Excellent question. So when we did our original proposal, some of the things we talked about was, maybe we could establish at a different joint angles or different positions, there might be more of an effect that would be observed on someone who is operating equipment, driving a truck, things like that, and then that may be able to be translated to ergonomic or workplace recommendations. The current study, we have difficulty generalizing our findings externally, but there you have it.
But I think what would be really interesting is that everybody had a different effect after the prolonged vibration. So, other studies could actually look at how long it takes someone to get back up to baseline NBC. So taking that, we could implement some standards where someone is on the jackhammer for 15 minutes, but they have to take a 20-minute break in between so that their NBC recovers.
I think there was a question.
Richard.
Me? Oh, that was basically the same question.
Oh, okay, very good.
study that you guys kept referring to that you're comparing to the Crestwell study, what, I don't know if I missed it because you kind of, I think you briefly introduced it, but what level of evidence is that study? Is that like your gold standard that everyone's kind of basing, like you seem to base your result, like compare your results to that?
I think that was the first study that actually compared maximal force or maximal voluntary contraction of plantar flexion at different knee joint angles. So what he wanted to see was that, okay, if I change my knee joint angle, is my maximal force production going to decrease? And what he found was there was a general trend that there was reduction from 180 degrees to about 90 degrees. And it's a pretty old, or 2005 actually, it's not that old, but it was a pretty gold standard study. It's a friend of Dr. Garland.
Yeah, and of course that study really only talks about the length tension relationship, which is a consideration in our study. But of course we wanted to see if we manipulated the length tension relationship, possibly affected the stretch reflex, there'd be no way to validate, and saw an increased effect or an interaction effect between those two things.
So you guys are kind of taking that.
We're going to step
up. Yeah, we're sort of linking different ideas together.
Thank you.
I was wondering, when you did the time between maximum voluntary contractions, how long was that?
It was a 15-second rest period.
How did you come up with that number?
In previous studies, they did rest periods as well. Yeah, and it's also the Evaluates protocol with regards to sequential MVC. They recommended anywhere between 10 and 20 seconds of rest.
Muscles tend to have, obviously, similar properties no matter where they are in the body, but could you generalize your findings to upper extremity muscles as well? Like for someone had a jackhammer who's just using the arms or had a device that only used your arms as opposed to like standing up with their legs,
Yeah, it would be, as we stated, the gastroc was ideal because of its composition of type 1 and type 2 fibers. But I think the general trend probably could be generalized to muscles in the human body.
There were many other studies that looked at different muscles. Everything from the first dorsal interossei to the quadriceps and isolating different parts of the quadriceps with indwelling EMG. The general trend for all of these studies is that prolonged tonic vibration decreases MVC. So we know that anybody who operates a jackhammer or who is exposed to workplace vibration is going to experience some decrement in their maximal voluntary contraction, which would potentially impact their work life if they worked a demanding physical job, something such as
an extraction. And there are studies that also looked at proprioception as well. So they got subjects to do a targeted task. So they would get them to point at a target or whatnot before vibration, and then they'll vibrate their upper extremity or muscles in their hands, and they'll get them to do the same task. And they found that their matching ability or their ability to point at a target was reduced as well.
Yes.
For the research that's out there, was there a common rationale that you guys found? Because vibrations, it's not a common, I don't know if it's just maybe a clinical rationale, or is it all different? Does that make sense? I'm wondering why people study vibration.
Okay. It is something that's commonly encountered in lots of workplaces. There are studies that look at lumberjacks with chainsaws, construction workers, truck drivers, things like that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Is it because people were getting injured, so they looked into it, or I was just wondering.
That was part of our rationale, but just keeping in mind that it's kind of, you would establish a trend now, and then it would be two or three studies down the road where you could actually get as far as making ergonomic recommendations. But it is, you're trying to figure out the trend and actually help it. Yes.
I was just curious because you talked about like the higher frequency of vibrations. Like, what do you guys have any idea of what like jackhammers and trucks are actually vibrating at? Are they at that frequency that you guys are saying that there's more like that deficit actually is happening with you?
It's incredibly variable. Is the honest answer. It could be everything from low 20 hertz all the way up to 200 hertz, depending on the application. Most of the research that was done, as we were alluding to before, is mostly reduced physiology study, so it's not really of direct impact to any of your clinical relevance, which is kind of unfortunate. But amidst that, in order to target, as we mentioned before, those type 2 fibers, we kind of went towards that 80 to 120 range.
The force place that someone would use at the gym, do you guys have any knowledge of what those look like or how much?
Apparently you can burn more calories. 3 times more calories.
What are their, yeah, what are their claims? Or do you guys, I didn't expect that you guys would have gone into that, but if there's any general knowledge.
Just from the infomercials I've seen, they claim that like you can burn 3 times more calories because you're using your postural muscles to help stabilize you when you're standing and whatnot. But I really don't know what the after effects of it are.
Is there any claim about force generation in those to promote vibratory stimulation?
Like studies have shown that a vibration of more than 2 minutes has a it causes a reduction in force reduces force production in type 2 fibers. So, I'm not sure what the effects are if someone's on there for less than 2 minutes or after 2 minutes. We didn't really look at that, but just to generalize, more than 2 minutes has a potential effect to decrease your force production of your type 2 fibers, but not necessarily your type 1 postural muscles. If that makes any sense.
I've used one clinically for rehab that was like the size when you hold on to, is that similar to what, the whole thing that I was explaining with pelvic fiber realignment, this was before my physio brain was inserted, was fiber realignment, and that was the big thing. Is that, am I totally out,
We didn't investigate any research to talk about fiber realignment. There are claims that with short vibration and for powerlifters, it's as short as 6 seconds. And what they're trying to do is for throwers like javelin and discus, there's some research out there that says that the motor drive coming down from the cortex to produce a true MVC for a world-class athlete is they can do that between 3 and 6 times per day. So to maximize their training, they're looking at immediate 3-second vibration before throwing a javelin, for example. And that's purely linked to the physiological effect, the stretch reflex, and MVC, but I've not heard anything about the fiber realignment.
Thank you.
Yes,
I assume the studies that you looked at, like the vibrations, were put directly on the muscle in question. It's my understanding that at the gym you'll actually be standing on it, so none of your muscles will be directly vibrated. I wonder if that has any different effect than directly stimulating a muscle and decreasing its MVC.
Yeah, that's, we're kind of getting into that whole body vibration as opposed to the pinpoint muscle specific tendon junction vibration. And the kind of the rationale that researchers have used is they're just looking to see how the muscle reacts, and it's better to pinpoint the muscle itself so they're aware of what the frequency, what the variables are, and then test the output. But the force plates definitely are full body, and that's kind of why we tried to mimic the research that we've been getting.
Did any of your reading take you into the smooth muscle literature and its sensitivity to vibration? Because there is vibrating tool syndrome, like a Raynaud's disease phenomenon with use of vibrating tools.
No, definitely not.
That would be kind of interesting to see if people have added sensitivity because of the, muscle's not going to work well if it's not perfused well.
I think a lot of the clinical applications are generalized. There were no studies that we found that actually looked at the clinical applications of vibration. They were more of a reduction type study.
The other question I had is that, you could argue in these kinds of studies, and I know when they do animal studies, that when you're looking at reflexes, you really don't need as many subjects, because it's kind of more binary. You either have it or you don't. I mean, did you see much variability across people with this reflex?
Unfortunately, well, no. Well, yes and no. But as Bobby went over with the limitations, we do suspect that there was some error in some of the measurements, especially with in certain conditions at the 90 degree in the pre-measurement conditions. There was just a couple times where people didn't go down at all, or maybe they went up by 2%. And in discussion with Dr. Garland and looking at the data, you know, our best a priori guess is that that was measurement error. So, but it seems like other than that, everyone has it.
Did anybody have any questions? Well, thank you very much.